The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the special section headline, Fast 50 Awards. These fastest growing private companies are outrunning market challenges. And as there are 50 of these, we'll read number one and then come back to more if there's time at the end. Number one, Alphanumeric Systems, headquarters Raleigh. Description provides life sciences companies solution-based services at all stages of a product's life cycle. Employees, 493. What is fueling your growth? Alphanumeric has a diverse and expanding portfolio of offerings for every stage of a product's life cycle. Our growth is attributed to a comprehensive and well-thought-out vision to provide a variety of key support services to the life sciences industry. Have the supply chain woes slowed your growth? No, we're a service-based organization with only a few select offerings that deal with tangible items. What percentage of your workforce is back to work at your physical location 5 days a week? Approximately a year before the pandemic, Alphanumeric decided to move to a more flexible remote employee operating model. Because of this success, it will continue to be our working model for the foreseeable future. Have you made any major adjustments to your pay scale given inflation? We have not made major adjustments across the organization, but have worked closely with our clients' partners to come up with strategic solutions to provide pay increases to our employees. As a global team, we are always looking at global and regional challenges that can financially impact our employees. The organization makes informed adjustments based off these assessments. And how many employees will you hire in the next 12 months? Hires at Alphanumeric are always calculated with statistical data tied to our industry, consideration for the long-term viability of our contracts, marketing, and business development activity, and a global view of current events that can inadvertently shape our industry. This equation allowed us to hire almost 100 new employees for 2022. Early assessments are leading us to the conclusion that we will have a similar year of growth that we did in 2022. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by Managing Editor Dane Huffman. Now Carrie has a Bailey box. Bailey's Fine Jewelry, an early believer in the Fenton Project, is open now as the massive Carrie development continues to unfold. Carrie has been on our radar for a while. We have a lot of Carrie customers, CEO Trey Bailey says. Carrie is obviously growing like crazy. It's an amazing city. The 5,000-square-foot store is the fifth traditional store for Bailey's, which also has an office in Los Angeles. The flagship store in Raleigh's Village District is 11,000 square feet and will expand to 12,500 later this month. Fenton broke ground in November 2020, and Bailey's already was on board. When we saw the announcement and the renderings, we were like, we have to check that place out, Bailey says. Once they pitched it to us, we signed on. Bailey is enthusiastic about the location as the Fenton build-out continues, but the opening comes at an uncertain time as the Triangle's rapid growth comes against national concerns over recession and continuing supply chain issues. Bailey's even had a soft opening in Cary before all the fixtures and showcases had arrived. Bailey says the company is seeing a little bit of a slowdown with economic concerns, but we've had a meteoric rise, so even though we are having a slowdown, it's significantly up over 2019, he says. Bailey also said the jewelry business can see some higher-end purchases even in a down economy. What we see sometimes is people get more sentimental for things they can pass down to another generation, he says. Swank Spot reopens in Durham. A luxury hotel in Durham has reopened its upscale lounge. The Lobby Lounge at the J.B. Duke Hotel on the Duke University campus is again serving guests and visitors after being closed since the early days of the pandemic. The lounge has been in a soft open mode but is now fully operating. The reopening brings new dessert items on the menu, including a chocolate ganache topped cheesecake, classic creme brulee, lemon mousse cake, and a trio of sorbet. The J.B. Duke Hotel is thrilled to once again welcome the Durham community and property guests to enjoy its lobby lounge, General Manager Don Ball says. Between the stunning peninsula bar, modern fireplace, and an abundance of comfortable seating areas, Lobby Lounge offers the perfect backdrop to connect with colleagues or relax after a day of travel, he says. Wolfpack coach is a hit at event. Elliot Avent, the head coach of NC State University's baseball team for 26 years, was the keynote speaker at the Boys and Girls Club serving Wake County's Breakfast of Champions gathering November 7, and his speech did not disappoint. Avent spoke mostly about leadership, community, and the inspirational work being done by the nonprofit, but what stood out for Biz during his speech was his comedic prowess. Avent quipped he was running late to the event and noticed the Crabtree Marriott parking lot was packed. While driving around and around, he said he started praying to God and pledged he will attend church more and use less foul language if God helped him in finding a parking spot. Just as I was praying, I saw an empty parking spot, he said. I said, never mind, I found one. Carborough leader honored by CNN. The leader of a Carborough nonprofit has been honored by CNN and is in the hunt for more. Nora L. Corey Spencer, CEO and founder of Hope Renovations, is one of CNN's top 10 heroes. Voting runs through December 6. Hope Renovations offers pre-apprenticeship programs for underemployed women so they can enter a trade or enroll in apprenticeships. Hope Renovations, launched in the summer of 2020, also offers home repairs and renovations for seniors as a way to help them stay in their homes and let trainees practice their skills. CNN is offering a $10,000 prize for being in the top 10, and the winning organization gets $100,000. The winner will be announced on a live show December 11th at 8 p.m., hosted by Anderson Cooper and Kelly Ripa. Epic weekend ahead in Raleigh. The Carolina Hurricanes are getting the band back together. Hootie and the Blowfish, a rock band hailing from South Carolina, is playing a show in PNC Arena prior to the Canes' first outdoor game. The band's lead singer, Darius Rucker, has branched off with a solo career in country music in recent years. The show will be a pre-party to the game and will be held on February 17. Hootie and the Blowfish will be joined by Susto, an indie rock band also from South Carolina. The February 18 game will feature the Canes playing the Washington Capitals in Carter-Finley Stadium. Tickets for the outdoor game sold out in a matter of hours back in October. And finally, a big number section, 18%. The year-over-year increase in median sale price in Raleigh's Oberlin and Five Points area, according to Zillow, the neighborhood's median home price stood at $966,000 as of September 30. That Raleigh neighborhood had the highest median sale price as of September 30th. It's more than $280,000 above the next most expensive zip code located in West Raleigh. And now we turn to the top news items in the Triangle Business Journal. The first article, growing RTP firm acquired by group tied to Quintile's founder, written by Zach Ezone. After a few years of rapid growth, a North Carolina contract development and manufacturing organization will soon have new owners. Private equity firms Global Healthcare Opportunities and the Vistria Group announced November 8 their acquisition of the Alcami Corporation, which has operations in Research Triangle Park and Wilmington. The CDMO works with pharma and biotech companies of all sizes from early stages of drug development through commercialization. The private equity firms will acquire a 50-50 controlling interest in the company from funds affiliated with Madison Dearborn Partners and Ampersand Capital Partners. Ampersand and the Alcami management team will roll over their investments as part of the transaction. GHO Capital's founders include Dennis Gillings, the former UNC Chapel Hill professor who founded Quintiles, and Mike Mortimer, a former executive vice president at Quintiles. In July 2020, the firm announced plans to open a U.S. office in RTP. Financial terms were not disclosed. The transaction is expected to close by the end of this year. The deal follows a period of expansion as Alcami has invested $140 million in capital projects, including manufacturing and laboratory space in the RTP area. Madison Dearborn acquired Alcami in 2018 from Ares Capital Corporation for an undisclosed amount. Alcami also completed two acquisitions in recent years, Morrisville's TriFarm Services and Boston's Massey Bioservices. Today, Alcami has facilities totaling 700,000 square feet of space and about 1,000 employees. The next phase of Alcami's growth could take place overseas. Alcami CEO Patrick Walsh says the company could look at opportunities in Europe and Japan to establish the kind of global operations the pharma companies are sometimes looking to access. Kart racing concept to Durham. New Edition joins Top Golf and Entertainment Development in Bull City. Article written by Laura Brumette. The development anchored by Top Golf in Durham is getting a speed boost. The first addition to the planned development surrounding Top Golf has been revealed. An entertainment company by the famed Andretti Racing family recently submitted new site plans showing an intent to join the project located off Page Road by Interstate 40. Site plans reveal a location for Andretti Indoor Karting and Games. The proposed building would be situated next to the Top Golf venue, which is currently under construction. The 89,000 square foot space would be two stories tall and feature 368 parking spaces and a surrounding lot. We chose Durham because of the rapid growth of the market as well as the multitude of entertainment options in the area, a statement from the company says. We have a high degree of confidence that the project will be completed in a timely fashion for all co-tenants. The interior of the space mirrors the brand's other venues with a large karting track, 8 bowling lanes, a kitchen and dining area, bar, large gaming area, and a laser tag space. The second floor features event space. The company has locations in Orlando, Florida, Marietta, and Buford, Georgia, and 3 in Texas. Andretti Indoor Karting and Games did not specify an estimated project cost, but says it will spend whatever we need to ensure that our guests can enjoy a high-end entertainment experience that is synonymous with the Andretti brand. The Top Golf location was announced in 2019 and included 2 hotels, office space, a Sheets gas station, and iFly indoor skydiving. By the time construction began on the Top Golf portion in late 2021, Sheets and the iFly had pulled out of the project and the plans for the rest of the development were left unknown. The Top Golf location was originally projected to open in the summer of 2022. Though construction has been moving along, the status of the project is currently unknown. The project's developer, Realty Link, declined to comment. The Andretti site plans are currently under review with the City of Durham. If plans are approved, the company is planning to open in late 2023. The Durham Topgolf location marks the Texas company's 3rd in the state, with 2 existing in locations in Charlotte. Tom Dundon, CEO and owner of the Carolina Hurricanes, has been a major Topgolf investor since 2011 and currently sits on the company's board of directors. Cash-strapped Durham firm signs interim CFO, written by Lauren Onasorge. As Avaya Holdings tries to pull itself out of a financial hole, the Durham company has tapped a new interim chief financial officer, signing a deal to pay her $225,000 per month. New securities filings show that just a few months after Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan led a debt deal that went south, Avaya CFO Karen McGrath notified the board that he was retiring. The board has appointed consultant Becky Roof as interim CFO. It's the latest change for a telecommunications company that reported big losses in August. Avaya, which entered the triangle with its buyout of Nortel assets in 2009, has pledged to cut costs by $250 million. The firm began layoffs in September to better align its workforce, quote, with its operational strategy and cost structure, unquote. That's what Avaya said in a securities disclosure. Roof, the managing director at consulting firm Alix Partners, has a long resume of interim CFO seats. On November 7, the firm also announced Shefali Shah, chief administrative officer, would take on responsibilities in connection with the strategic initiatives implemented under CEO Alan Masaryk. And our next article, written by Kaylee Thompson, has the headline, CRE Leaders Weigh Changes in Market, Panel Sees Tricky Trends as Investment Tightens, Remote Work Continues. It's a critical juncture for commercial real estate investors and developers across the triangle as the industry faces headwinds from financial markets tightening and remote work leaving some office spaces unused. Raleigh's Kane Realty Corporation has several projects underway and planned, including major developments that will transform North Hills and the planned Downtown South development. The North Hills development is vertical, with shells of buildings being built out where J.C. Penney once stood. The Ruth Chris Steakhouse, that was demolished to make way for the new buildings, will be coming back in the same location but in a newer, upgraded space, Kane Realty CEO John Kane said during the RMA Triangle Commercial Real Estate Panel on November 8. Meanwhile, the Eastern Residences in North Hills, a 35-story luxury residential building, is 55% leased. Office space seems to be risky business lately, with companies abandoning space and reducing their office square footage. Kane said he is concerned, especially since his company just broke ground on 300,000 square feet of spec office space, and 600,000 square feet of unleased spec office space is under construction in North Hills. I think people are going to come back to the office, and it is going to turn where the employer has the leverage versus the employee having the leverage. Our timing is we will be delivering that space in about 2+ years out, and we're betting that by that time there will be more activity and people will be back in the office, Kane said. Jim Harris, CEO of Trademark Properties, noted that we're seeing divergent trends for the future of office, pointing to local companies Bandwidth and Pendo. The latter with a new headquarters that's rich with amenities and a new office building downtown, and the former building a huge inclusive campus in West Raleigh. You've got two very different mentalities on what working from office is going to look like, Harris said. That's what kind of keeps me up at night in a good way. Mark Alviano, Trinity Partners investment sales partner, said he is predicting 2023 will be a quiet year as far as office leasing and property sales are concerned. Trinity Partners has seen about 75% of upcoming renewal leases with tenants looking to significantly reduce space. Alviano said some companies seem to be doing flight to quality, where the company is willing to pay the same or a little more for less space in a higher quality location. Kane said it has been especially challenging to find capital for any project. It depends upon the relationship you have with the bankers, but we're finding that we might go out for a larger project to 30 or 35 banks. You might have three that are interested in talking to you, Kane said. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Technology page written by Lauren Onasorge. Apex company is sold to Pennsylvania firm. PolyZen was founded by Tilak Shah, is now run by his sons. A second-generation family business that grew from nothing to become one of the fastest-growing companies in the Triangle has been acquired by a Pennsylvania firm, a move its co-CEO says will take it through the next 30 years. Apex-based PolyZen, a polymer company led by brothers Ruben and Nikin Shah, has been acquired by Solasys, an advanced biomaterials company that develops components for customers in the medical device, biopharmaceutical, and life sciences industries. Co-CEO Ruben Shah says the company has been evaluating options for more than a year. The decision came when we were on an upward growth trajectory, and we realized our appetite for ambition and growth was far greater than what our ability was to personally invest, he says. We said, look, we need to find a strategic partner, a financial partner to help and allow us to see this business remain for the next 30 years. The Shah brothers are staying on board. Ruben Shah says his father, Tilak Shah, who founded the company, is excited. I think he knows the company is in good hands for it to grow for the next 30 years, he says. For him to see his dream come to fruition and really realize the full potential of PolyZen is going to be pretty amazing. The company was founded in 1991. At one point, the company, now at 85 employees, was among the fastest-growing firms in the Triangle. PolyZen will continue to be based in Apex and will operate as a subsidiary of Solasys. Solasys is headquartered in Pennsylvania and also has manufacturing facilities in North Carolina. Issuer Direct grows headcount with buy. Raleigh-based Issuer Direct Corporation purchased Newswire owner iNewswire .com LLC, a media and marketing communications technology firm, from Lead Capital for $43.9 million, a move that boosts the bottom line for the company. The deal, which included a cash payment of $18 million, a secured promissory note worth $22 million, and $3.9 million in stock, closed recently. The plan is to combine Issuer Direct's own AccessWire offerings with Newswire to create a press release distribution platform powerhouse, quote, almost doubling our press release customer base, unquote. Issuer Direct CEO Brian Balberni says the plan is to keep Newswire's 60 employees intact, but not the Sarasota, Florida headquarters. With the deal, Issuer Direct now has 160 employees. Eventually, some employees based in Sarasota may be invited to move to Raleigh, but the plan is to allow remote working, he says. And finally, tech cutbacks could impact the Triangle. Hiring freezes and layoffs are looming at some of the biggest tech companies, which could impact the Triangle's economy. Christian Lundblad, a professor at UNC Kenan Flagler Business School, says positive labor reports show inflation is likely to remain a target for the Federal Reserve. Should hiring freezes and layoffs plague big technology companies, there could be opportunities for smaller Triangle firms to pick up talent. With the rise of remote working, the competition for tech talent is coming from everywhere, but the opportunities, too, could come from everywhere as well. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to our continuing series, 52 Shades of Success, Earth and Equity. The headline, Solarizing Gets Less Costly. 11 municipalities embrace crowdsourcing to accelerate the adoption of clean energy across much of the Triangle region. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the Earth and Equity Project explores the growing awareness, actions, and accountability of businesses and leaders who face opportunities and challenges relating to environmental, social, and governance issues, or ESG. The 52-week project will highlight what selected companies and Triangle executives are doing to address climate change, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and ways to maneuver the new world of corporate responsibility. Solarize the Triangle is heating up. The Triangle has until the end of the year to beat Atlanta's record of more than 1,100 participants in their first crowdsourcing campaign, and it's approaching 900. The objective is to accelerate the adoption of clean energy across the Triangle by incentivizing businesses, nonprofits, and homeowners with discounts afforded through a community-based group purchasing program. It's really not about outperforming a sister city, despite Emily Barrett's competitive spirit. Barrett, the Environment and Resilience Program Manager at Triangle J Council of Governments, and Tobin Freed, Sustainability Manager for Durham County, assembled the necessary players and spearheaded Solarize the Triangle. The Solarize platform depends on economies of scale, Barrett says. Turns out sustainability managers and local municipalities had been waiting for an opportunity to collaborate in a way that would make this easier at a residential and commercial level. 11 governments joined, including Chatham, Durham, and Orange counties, the cities of Durham and Raleigh, and the towns of Apex, Carrboro, Cary, Chapel Hill, Hillsborough, and Morrisville. The crowdsourcing initiative is being managed by Atlanta-based Solar Crowdsource, which also has conducted Solarize campaigns across the country, including in Asheville. The program takes confusion and cost out of the equation. Following an arduous evaluation of potential vendors, Yes Solar Solutions was selected to be the installation partner, effectively identifying the best solar provider for participants. Via the crowdsourcing platform, costs are reduced roughly 25%. Pricing is tiered for businesses and nonprofits based on the size of their system. For residential installations, pricing is tiered based on the aggregated volume of all participants. It's a simple process where the online enrollment, which must be done by December 31, initiates a property assessment by Yes Solar to determine the viability of an installation. Commercial participants will then have until June 30th to contract. Homeowners have until March 31. Solarize the Triangle is the biggest opportunity we've had to impact climate change in our communities, says Paul Kelly, who along with his wife Pat co-led the Earth Friendly Practices team at Interfaith Creation Care of the Triangle, or ICCT. At St. Francis of Assisi, the church they attend in Raleigh, more than 250 solar panels were installed 2 years ago. Now they're looking at the Solarize campaign as a way to bring more solar to the campus. I'd like to put it on the church school. It would be a learning opportunity for the children because they could see reporting about how much CO2 is captured, what that means in tree equivalents, feedback that makes it real for them, says Pat Kelly, a former school guidance counselor. They're looking into capabilities with battery storage and considering ground installations or parking lot canopies in addition to rooftop solar. At ICCT, we're also monitoring how Solarize can bring this to lower and moderate income families, Paul Kelly says. Enabling more affordable energy options for LMI households is a focus for the municipalities as well, Freed says. Both the city of Durham and the county have allocated $50,000 for solar on LMI homes. Criteria for identifying LMI housing is being defined, but the goal is for consistent expectations across all municipalities. It does not make sense to put solar systems on homes that are not insulated well or that need roofs replaced, she says. Assessing the viability of properties for solar installation is the first thing that Yes Solar does for enrollees in the project. The age of the roof, exposure to sunlight, and the shade canopy of the property are all considerations. We've done commercial work from 50 to 100 kilowatts to over a megawatt, and probably the sweet spot is an owner-occupied building where the owner can see the benefit of energy savings, says Kathy Miller, CEO of Yes Solar Solutions, which she co-founded with her husband, Stu. It's best to have an open, flat space on the roof for contiguous systems, but we also do solar on ground installations and parking canopies, like the curving carport canopy and EV charging stations we did at Rowan Cabarrus Community College. Among the nearly 900 enrollees thus far, commercial entities include educational institutions, houses of worship, a medical practice, a farm, a car wash, and nonprofits. Financial incentives made possible through the Inflation Reduction Act are a motivating force. It's a whole new world for solar. Before, there was a 26% tax credit that was going to 22% next year, 10% in 2024 and in 2025. It was going away. The IRA changed it to 30% retroactive to this year and extended it for 10 years, Miller says. Nonprofits stand to benefit as well, thanks to a provision that provides non-taxed entities participating in clean energy projects with a direct payment option in lieu of tax credits. That starts in 2023, and the fact that nonprofits can apply for a direct pay option for that same 30% is a game changer, she says. Additionally, Duke Energy has a $62 million solar rebate program that included up to $75,000 for nonprofits. That program will end early in 2023, but nonprofits can apply for the rebate before December 31. Duke Energy has no plans for additional solar rebate programs and no official connection with the Solarize campaign. However, they report the current program increased solar adoption in North Carolina from 6,000 installations in 2017 to more than 34,000 today. Solarize the Triangle plans to launch a second campaign in 2023. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. First headline, luxury homes rise in hot part of the triangle. Chatham County sees intense interest in homes at higher end. The housing market was undoubtedly slowed down as mortgage interest rates shoot past 7% nationwide, but the market for homes priced above $1 million is still thriving, says one Raleigh builder. It's as strong as I've ever seen it in my career, and I started the summer I turned 14, and I'll be 43 next year, says Joshua Mawney, president of Paragon Building Group. Paragon is developing Riverstone Estates, a 33-lot community in Chatham County, where prices range between $1.3 million to $3 million. The community sits off U.S. Highway 64, about 4 miles east of downtown Pittsburgh, and it continues a trend where high-end homes are in hot demand in Chatham County as companies and developments target that area. The median home value in Chatham County is now $544,000 as of July 31, according to Zillow data, up over 50% in the last 18 months. Mawney says Riverstone Estates is close to selling out. There are only 7 lots left. He projects the community will sell out by the end of this year or first quarter 2023. He added that buyers are coming from both residents inside the triangle looking for more space to spread out and out-of-state buyers looking to build a home in Chatham County. It's really a cross-section of people moving into the triangle, Mawney says. Riverstone Estates isn't a typical luxury community. The homes are made with universal design principles, which makes homes accessible no matter age or disability. Some of the features include owner suites on the first floor. All doors are 36 inches wide. Shower stalls are barrier-free for entry. And doors have levers instead of knobs for people with rheumatoid arthritis. Abandoned mall sold to city for $3 million. Leaders of the city of Wilson, are starting to craft a plan for how to redevelop the 45-acre Wilson Mall after the city council voted in October to purchase it for $3 million from Hull Property Group. City officials say the mall will be demolished because the building has been vacant for so long. For its next phase, a significant portion of the property will host a place where the community can get together, like a park. Roger Lentz, Wilson Assistant City Manager, says the park could be built on half of the property while the other half could be commercially developed. About half the acreage would be this open space area, Lentz says. That area that's left over could certainly be some mixed use. Lentz says Wilson is about 6 months out from closing the purchase of the mall and added that the city will absolutely have a plan for the property by the end of 2023. And finally, Target says Southern Pines plans are a go. It's official. Target is opening its first store in Moore County. The upcoming Target store in the Morganton Park South development in Southern Pines has been much discussed over the last year, but the retailer has repeatedly declined to confirm its plans. But a Target spokesperson confirms that the chain is opening a 148,000 square foot store at the development. I can confirm Target has plans to open the Southern Pines store, Target's Maddie Wojtalowicz says. We're excited to bring an easy, safe, and convenient shopping experience to new guests in the community with this new Target store. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Bromette. Hillsborough Street spot getting a fresh look. Crumble Cookies, local eatery headed to locale near NC State. Popular cookie brand Crumble Cookies and local concept The Dankery are Hillsborough Street's newest additions. The buildings located at 2526 Hillsborough Street, known as the Electric Company Mall, will house the new tenants as its new owners work to reinvent the space. Crumble Cookies has gained a nationwide following for its menu of giant cookies with rotating flavors. The company was founded in 2017 and now has over 600 franchise locations across the country. The new store will be the Triangle's sixth location. Crumble Cookies will occupy an empty box located directly to the right of the new Starbucks at the corner of Hillsborough and Pogue Streets on the same block as Target. The Dankery, started by Ian Burris, serves late-night bites. Burris created the brand 5 years ago as a food truck operating out of his parents' garage. His first brick-and-mortar location opened last year in Durham at 704 Rigsby Avenue. The new spot is located in the former Wing It On space on the Pogue Street side of the building. Projected opening dates for both tenants were not provided. Charlotte-based Carolina Capital purchased the Electric Company Mall building in December for $5.8 million. The private equity real estate firm is planning significant renovations for the building, including storefront upgrades and a mural by local artist Lisa Gaither. The building, dating to 1940, measures around 43,000 square feet and sits on 0.53 acres, according to property records. At the time of purchase, the building had around 10 tenants. Carolina Capital Real Estate's John Ash told Triangle Business Journal. The Starbucks location opened in the building's corner space in January. Other tenants include Bull Box and NC State University. Raleigh Brewer taps top West Coast talent. R&D Brewing, known for producing the official beer of the Carolina Hurricanes, has hired Mark Thiessen as the brand's newest director of brewing operations. R&D Brewing, led by CEO John Glover, hopes to grow into a regional powerhouse. It also produces a beer for Wake Forest and Appalachian State Universities and bought Bull Durham Brewing in 2019. A Carolina native, Thiessen began at Mission Brewing before taking over at the Coronado Brewing Company, named as Best Mid-Sized Brewery and Brewmaster at the World Beer Cup Championship. He sought a change of scenery, making a list of the top three areas with an exciting brew scene. Austin, Texas, Boston, and the Triangle made the list. R&D is making a name for itself not just for their award-winning delicious beers, but also for their intentional and smart growth, Thiessen says. I'm thrilled to join a team with a strong foundation. And finally, Walgreens locations sold again. The Walgreens store located at 1210 Kildare Farm Road in Cary has been sold to a California investment company for $7.78 million. The seller, Chicago Swanson Development Group, purchased the property for the same price on August 5th. The newest deed is dated October 24. The 15,000-square-foot building was built in 2007 and is situated on 2 acres near a Trader Joe's location. Milestone Holdings, the new owner, is a private investment firm that manages the assets of Gregory Chabola and David Christensen, according to its website. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Kaylee Thompson. Priest Company plans more housing near NC State. College View Project on South Campus will have 236 apartments. A Raleigh company is looking to develop more student housing by NC State University as demand continues to grow. The Priest Company recently submitted new site plans to the city for a development called College View Apartments. The apartments will be at 1406 Varsity Drive, next to South Campus and near the university's Greek Village. The development will be a 5-story building with 236 total units. There will be 55 one-bedroom units, 58 two-bedroom units, 13 three-bedroom units, and 110 four-bedroom units. In addition, a 142,727-square-foot parking deck will be built with 451 spaces proposed. Susan Folkhammer, chief acquisition and development partner for Priest, says the project is still in the planning stages and that the estimated delivery is by 2026. The total cost is unknown at this time, she says. The property sits on 0.2 acres and currently holds a handful of houses that will be torn down. However, site plans show the acreage for the project is 4.17, and renderings show the project extending south along Crest Road, indicating surrounding properties will be part of the project. Folkhammer says Priest is under contract for an assemblage of properties to develop this project. The total assessed value of 1406 Varsity Drive is $308,183. Wake County records show the property is currently owned by individuals with an address in Pennsylvania. Virginia firm plans $50 million apartment complex. Castle Development Partners of Charlottesville, Virginia, has filed new site plans for a $50 million, 227-unit multifamily development in the town of Apex. The community will be at the intersection of Laura Duncan Road and North Salem Street, north of U.S. Highway 64. The apartments will be a mix of 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units, a 2,000-square-foot swimming pool, courtyard grill, fireplace, bocce court, fitness center, work pods, and dog park are all features of the community amenities. Castle Development Director of Construction Operations, Jeff Shiflett, says Castle will deliver the project called North Salem Station by July 2025, with delivery of the first units in January 2025. The 10.39-acre property is a total of 7 lots and sits on the town border with Cary, putting the residences in a prime location. And finally, development has new homes, condos, shops. Alliance Group of North Carolina has submitted new plans for a project called Downtown North at Knightdale Station. The project is spread over 7 lots on Smithfield Road, 1st and 4th Avenues, and is across the street from Knightdale Station Park. The 90.73-acre mixed-use project will have 136 single-family detached homes, 188 townhomes, 144 condominiums, and 100 multifamily apartments. Plans show a multitude of commercial options for the site, 25,000 to 60,000 square feet for grocery, 25,000 to 35,000 square feet for a fitness tenant, 50 to 60,000 square feet for a national retail tenant, 60 to 80,000 square feet for local shops and smaller retail tenants, 60 to 80,000 square feet of professional services, and a 115-room hotel. And now we turn to the page written by Zach Ezone on healthcare and higher ed. Cineo stock falls after earnings dip. CEO, performance unacceptable after growth stalls. For the second consecutive quarter, shares of one of the largest life sciences employers in the Triangle have slid after the company lowered its expected revenue and earnings for the year. Syneos Health, which offers clinical and commercial solutions to pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies, reported revenue for the third quarter of about $1.3 billion, or nearly 1% drop from last year. I'm disappointed to share that Syneos Health experienced more significant headwinds in net awards, revenue, and margins than anticipated during the third quarter, producing results that were well below our expectations and, frankly, unacceptable, CEO Michelle Keefe said during a November 4 earnings call. The results appeared to be below investors' expectations as well. The company's stock dropped about 46% in a single day to $25.70 a share. This was down from $47.81 the day before and about 74% from the beginning of the year. Syneos was formed 5 years ago through the merger of Inc. Research and Inventive Health. Since then, the company has grown from one that generated revenue of $1.85 billion in 2017 to $5.21 billion in 2021. As of earlier this year, Syneos employed more than 29,000 people globally, with about 1,500 in the Triangle and 2,300 in North Carolina. During the earnings call, the company shared updated guidance figures that place expected revenue for the year between $5.3 billion to $5.36 billion. This drop follows Syneos in August, lowering its guidance from a range of $5.6 billion to $5.75 billion to a range of $5.44 billion to $5.54 billion. The new expectations would represent growth of 1.7% to 2.8% over last year, rather than the 7.4% to 10.3% growth the company previously projected. Syneos largely attributed the disappointing quarter to issues with a key customer segment in its clinical business. The clinical solution side of Syneos generated $1 billion during the quarter, a decrease of about 3.5% from last year. Meanwhile, revenue for its commercial solutions business totaled $333 million, up 8%. On the clinical side, Syneos focuses on three customer segments: pre-revenue biotechs, small to mid-sized biotechs, and large pharma. Durham Pharma stops rare disease program. Pointing to a crowded market, a Durham drug developer has discontinued one of its clinical programs, allowing the company to redirect up to $100 million elsewhere. BioCryst Pharmaceuticals disclosed during an earnings call November 1 its decision to stop the development of a drug targeting an ultra-rare genetic disorder that causes muscles and tendons to gradually turn into bone. This will open up resources for the company to redirect elsewhere, including resuming enrollment of patients in studies that faced a partial clinical hold from federal regulators earlier this year. The decision to shut down its development of the investigational treatment called BCX9250 is in response to several late-stage programs targeting fibrodysplasia ossificans progressiva, or FOP, from potential competitors that are further along in development, said Helen Thackray, BioCryst Chief Research and Development Officer. We have concluded that it's increasingly likely the needs of patients here may be served by other products before BCX9250 can achieve registration, Thackray said. And finally, new biotech firm has $60 million to get started. A new biotech firm has launched in the Triangle with $60 million and a naturally derived psychedelic compound aimed at treating depression. This month, Lucaris Therapeutics spun out of Boston-based RA Capital Management with funding to support the development of a serotonergic psychedelic for patients with treatment-resistant depression disorder, as well as two other preclinical programs addressing neuropsychiatric and neurological disorders. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Healthcare Sector Saving Us from Recession. New money pouring into healthcare and life sciences by the private and public sectors may have kept the U.S. from going into a deep recession by now. We knew the country was getting old, and the pandemic started a new wave of public funding from the National Institutes of Health, the National Science Foundation, and other agencies to make sure the new discovery of drugs and therapeutics become a priority to avoid a wholesale shutdown of the economy such as the one in 2020. But it is only now that we realize, after analyzing 1 year's worth of economic data, that healthcare and life sciences research and commercialization are increasingly playing a bigger role in our economy in creating jobs and forcing the dollar to move downstream to help affiliated services tied to the sector. First, the numbers. According to the latest jobs report, the healthcare and social assistance sector created 72,000 jobs in October, dwarfing every other sector, followed by the folks at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But it is not an anomaly. For the year so far, the healthcare sector is creating an average of 47,000 jobs a month, compared to only 9,000 a month in 2021. Just weeks before the latest jobs report, the BLS announced there were 2 million job openings in healthcare and social assistance, amounting to a job opening rate of 9.2%. And those vacancies may be most prevalent in the hospital sector, where workers were quitting left and right during and post-COVID, and forcing hospital CEOs to fill the gaps with contract labor. That is driving up healthcare wages. In another report released October 28, the Bureau found that wages and salaries increased 5.1% over a one-year period ending in September 2022. In the year before that, ending September 2021, wages and salaries increased by 4.2%. Private and public sector funding of life sciences companies and research consortiums and universities is another reason for this sustained rise in employment and economic influence. In 2021, national bioscience industry employment reached 2.1 million jobs across more than 127,000 business establishments spread across every state in the U.S. And according to BIO, the trade group that represents the biosciences industry, since 2018, bioscience employers grew their payrolls by 11%, while the private sector overall experienced a net jobs decline of 1.5% due to the steep job losses experienced during the initial pandemic wave and economic shutdowns of 2020. Bioscience industry establishments and average wages also have risen at double-digit rates over the latest three-year period. While these numbers tell a clear story, what it does not show is that the absence of public and private dollars would have sent the U.S. economy into a tailspin by now. With the tech sector amid its biggest restructuring in 12 years and with a forced slowdown of the housing sector through mortgage rate hikes, the Federal Reserve is far from loosening its rate hike reins. Things are likely to get worse before it gets better, especially if lending comes to a screeching halt and the dollar stops changing hands. But the healthcare and life sciences sectors have padded themselves up with a cushion that will make the hard landing far softer than most industries. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to a better world inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. First, we'll start with a column written by David Heinen, who is the Vice President for Public Policy and Advocacy for the NC Center for Nonprofits. The headline: Why overhead often can be undervalued in nonprofits. Earlier this month, the North Carolina Center for Nonprofits held its first in-person statewide nonprofit conference since the start of the pandemic. The center of the main meeting room at the Durham Convention Center featured a nonprofit marketplace where two dozen businesses had booths, including accounting firms, technology companies, human resource advisors, marketing consultants, and employee benefit providers. This broad group hinted at an important takeaway for nonprofit leaders. It is critical to invest in infrastructure that can help their organizations operate more effectively and sustainably. Unfortunately, some nonprofits shy away from investment in resources that might be deemed overhead, administrative expenses, or indirect costs, often out of concern that potential donors and volunteers might be less interested in supporting charities that spend too much on overhead. In reality, there are many types of overhead expenses that help nonprofits provide better quality programs and services and have a more meaningful impact on our communities. Here are a few examples. Financial services. Many nonprofits engage accounting firms for tax assistance and for audits or financial reviews. Donors, media, government agencies, and the public carefully scrutinize nonprofits' Form 990 filings with the Internal Revenue Service, so professional assistance is often a wise investment to help ensure that a nonprofit's 990 is accurate and tells its story effectively. Likewise, it is best practice for larger and mid-sized nonprofits to have accountants perform regular financial reviews to ensure their finances are in order. Technology. Like businesses, most nonprofits have websites, organizational computer networks, and a variety of hardware and software. Often, it's more efficient for nonprofits to outsource the management of their technology. Also, many technology providers cater to charitable organizations. For example, nonprofits with large fundraising campaigns often purchase donor management systems, and some direct service nonprofits use case management software to track their programs and services. Human resources. Most nonprofit organizations cannot provide their full range of programs and services without reliable workers. Unfortunately, many nonprofits recently have struggled to maintain full staffing levels. Nonprofits often work with consultants to develop plans for filling vacancies and recruiting leaders during transitions. Employee benefits. Charitable nonprofits typically offer slightly lower salaries than for-profit businesses, so it's important for nonprofits to offer attractive benefits to attract and retain employees. Nonprofits often work closely with employee benefit providers to figure out their best options for healthcare coverage, retirement options, and other benefits. Insurance and risk management. Having basic insurance can help mitigate the cost of unexpected legal and organizational challenges. Nonprofits typically work with insurance brokers to find the best general liability and directors and officers insurance policies to meet their organization's needs. Many also invest in other forms of risk management to limit their liability and protect the communities they serve. Legal services. Noncompliance can jeopardize nonprofits' reputations and tax-exempt status. To help ensure that they are following federal and state laws and regulations, many nonprofits consult with outside legal counsel. Should your business work more closely with nonprofits? Well, here are three tips to consider. Nonprofits make great customers. Nonprofits typically are cautious in vetting potential vendors, but they tend to be loyal customers. And nonprofits represent a significant part of the market for many types of business services overall. Triangle nonprofits spend more than $18 billion per year. Learn to speak nonprofits' language. A company is more likely to get a nonprofit's business if it can make a clear case for why its product or services will help the nonprofit achieve its mission. To understand a nonprofit's priorities and how it describes its own work, check out the organization's website in 990 to learn more about its charitable purposes, its programs and services, and its values. And number three, don't judge a nonprofit only by its numbers. Besides providing services to nonprofits, business leaders can support the work of nonprofits by making financial contributions to them and by volunteering their time for charitable causes. With so many nonprofits to choose from, it can be easy to discount organizations that spend a relatively high percentage of their budgets on administrative expenses or overhead. Charity ratings that simply rank nonprofits based on their administrative expense ratios often undervalue organizations that invest in the infrastructure necessary to be a well-functioning, accountable, and sustainable. Avoid the trap of relying on a simple ratio to determine whether a nonprofit is worthy of your time or money. And now we turn to the nonprofit briefs. Turkeys for the Holidays, a Durham entertainment company, is leading an effort to provide more than 100 turkeys for those in need over the holiday season. Family Business LLC is leading the Feed the City effort, which began in 2020. Family Business is collaborating with the Believe Community and Life Center, Gifts with Elegance, Elite Dolls of Faith, and Runnin' Legacy to raise more than 100 turkeys in 30 days. The event will be November 20 from noon to 3 p.m. at the Durham Bottling Company. My hardships helped to shape me into a strong leader and community activist. I can never forget the cold nights or the hunger pains. Now with the Feed the City initiative, I strive to carry the burden of serving those less fortunate and becoming a resource I wish my family had growing up, says Carlos O'Brien, CEO of Family Business. Ride benefits V Foundation. The V Foundation, a Cary-based nonprofit that supports cancer research, will receive a gift of $1.5 million after more than 126 employees of Bristol-Myers Squibb completed the company's ninth annual cross-country ride known as Coast to Coast for Cancer. or C2C4C. The total includes a $500,000 match from the company. Riders began in Cannon Beach, Oregon, and ended in Long Branch, New Jersey, covering nearly 3,000 miles over 27 days. A group of oncology employees began the effort in 2014, and the V Foundation became the beneficiary in 2018. Our partnership with Bristol-Myers Squibb for the Coast to Coast for Cancer Ride is an opportunity to bring hope to the millions of patients and families affected by cancer each year, said Shane Jacobson, CEO at the V Foundation. And finally, UNC students raise dollars for Children's Hospital. Carolina for the Kids, a student-run nonprofit at UNC Chapel Hill, raised more than $65,000 on October 30th through its 10th annual Kilometers for the Kids Fun Run and 5K. The money supports the UNC Children's Hospital. Since its inception in 1997, the nonprofit has raised over $6.6 million for patients and families. This year, the race started at the Old Well on the Carolina campus and included 555 participants. Each year, I am in awe of the immense support we get from family, friends, community members, local businesses, and more, said Larcy Britt, the CFTK Executive Director. Now we'll mention some of the big numbers listed on pages of the Triangle Business Journal. The first one, 1,039, the number of new homes and apartments that were approved during one recent Sanford City Council meeting. And the next number is number one. That's where North Carolina ranked in the South in a recent study determining the best places for street style, an up-and-coming fashion sector featuring cargo pants and graphic T-shirts. The Tar Heel State ranked number five in the nation, coming behind fashion meccas such as New York and California. And the next big number is $400 million, the amount Dallas-based CBRE plans to cut in costs. Of that, $300 million of it will be permanent, and most will involve headcount reductions, although the company did not reveal how many layoffs will happen. And the last big number is $4 million. That's how much Raleigh startup Lumada Health raised in a recent Series A round. Lumada partners with ophthalmology practices to support patient adherence to treatment plans. The company expects to grow from 46 employees to close to 200 by the end of next year. And last thing we'll mention is the Business Pulse survey. The question, when was the last time you flew internationally? 205 responses received. 40% say within the last 6 months. 39% say not since before the pandemic. 12% say this year. 5% say within the last 18 months. And 4% say still planning for a European vacation. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.